and Merry Christmas, everyone. And I hope you've all had the happiness you hope for this holiday season. We've had some power outage here yesterday, so we're around a day late going out, so I apologize for this. But we're all back up and running now, so on with tonight's show anyway. So a few days ago, I received a message via our website. Thank you to Charlotte Wagner for reaching out. That's really cool of you. The message asked why we haven't done more episodes around aliens and UFOs, considering that it's our main logo. So as much as I think Roswell and Skinwalker were pretty UFO-centric episodes, we are a fairly new show, and as we only go out weekly, we might take a little while to come around to every subject matter that we'd like to, or indeed you'd like us to, cover. But we will get there eventually. We have almost 200 episodes planned so far, be it researched or written, and many of them feature UFOs and aliens. So if you stick with us and maybe drop us a subscribe, you'll get what you want, hopefully, and hopefully, maybe more. So talking of UFOs and aliens, tonight's episode is titled, Are We Alone? There is an old dinner party saying that goes, it would be extremely arrogant of humans to assume that we are alone in the universe. And I guess that's true. But how does that translate to stats and data exactly? I consulted the University of Cambridge, who are home to the Institute of Astronomy. By their scientific estimation, deduced from their own observation and data shared from both NASA and the European Space Agency, they perceive that around 10% of stars have planets orbiting them. In our galaxy, the Milky Way, there are around 300 billion stars, so by that estimation, there must be around 30 billion planets in just our galaxy alone. Now consider that figure and throw in that there are around 100 billion galaxies estimated in the known universe. That number is incredible. More so, if there isn't intelligent life on any of those planets, the number of which is so big there is no name for it, then that is indeed arrogant for us to assume. But at the same time, that's something bigger than I think the average person can possibly comprehend. I think it would make winning the lottery feel like a non-entity, a by-the-minute certainty even. So statistically, we're probably not alone. And if we're not, are they already here? Amongst us? Watching us? Interacting with us? By they, I of course mean extraterrestrials. Sentient beings not from our planet or dimension. Or understanding by scientific or non-conventional knowledge. So where do I even start with a subject as broad as this one? I think 1947 is a good place to start. We'll cover ancient aliens and visitations in a separate podcast. But I think that 1947 is a good place in current history that sits as a marker in the sand for where current and known phenomena were first reported or came into the public perception. Obviously, 1947 was the crash at Roswell in New Mexico, and also the year of the Kenneth Arnold UFO incident. Prior to this, the thought of little green men wasn't really thought about in the public psyche. Science fiction writers were starting to make a foray into creatures from another world, sure, but space aliens certainly wasn't something that many people had thought about, contemplated, or even dreamed of. But that changed almost overnight after Roswell, especially as we ventured into the 1950s, with incidents like the Lubbock Lights, Levelland, Betty and Barney Hill, and the UFOs over Washington, D.C. in 1952. But were these UFOs and phenomenon appearing at a time when our skies were already littered with strange craft anyway? It was, after all, the height of the Cold War. The United States, the United Kingdom, Russia, and various European nations were quickly building top-secret weapons and craft of their own, and testing these in a very secretive way. This is not to say the UFO sightings were secret military aircraft, however. Certainly some might have been. But there is speculation that as the weapons we on Earth developed got bigger and bigger, and the risk each nation on Earth posed to one another also increased, as did the wars and the number of deaths in those wars climbed higher and higher, that perhaps life forms from other planets started to take an interest and concern in us, and our ever-expanding warmongering. Researcher Dr. Stephen M. Greer, through his Disclosure Project, found and encouraged many military personnel to come forward and talk about what strange phenomenon they saw during their time in the military. Several of the servicemen that came forward for Dr. Greer's project were stationed at missile launch silos. Nuclear missile launch silos. They stated that many times throughout the years that they were stationed there, they were buzzed by UFOs, encountered them hovering over the silos, shining lights down on the silos, and most alarmingly, completely shutting down the silos' ability to launch and removing the military's capacity to control their weaponry. And what's more, the military had no idea how they did it. So were these still mistaken sightings? or were these genuine sightings of a race that were interested or concerned about what the hell we were doing here on Earth? Or maybe even both? The reason I say both is that throughout the 1990s and early 2000s, there was a massive spate in sightings of black triangular aircraft over various parts of the United States, United Kingdom, and a small pocket of countries in Europe. What we now know is that the United States military had developed a craft with Lockheed Martin, and was at that very same time testing said craft, or the TR-38 as it emerged it was called. It was essentially a silent manned aircraft entirely black with lights on each corner and a main plasma reactor in the center. The reactor also reportedly became illuminated at times and was utilized as a strong strobe light when hovering. It was capable of incredible speed and maneuverability, but it is still classified top secret now, 20 years later. None of this was speculation either, as a British report released in May 2006 evidenced that Project Condyne was conducted by the UK Ministry of Defence between 1997 and 2000. The project was a secret study into UFO phenomenon, and the black triangles, as the public reported the TR-38s to be, were advised not to be approached and no attempt to outmaneuver them should be made. The aircraft were also blamed for the famous Belgium wave of sightings in the early 1990s. Referring to this specific incident, Project Condyne stated, and I quote, "The rash of sightings did not confirm the previous deployment of Black Project aircraft, and that the object's origins and agendas were unknown." Wait a minute. So did the UK government just indirectly confirm that it had prior knowledge of Black Triangular aircraft, and that it had also deployed Black Project aircraft themselves in the past? Edgar Fausch, who worked with the US military black projects for nearly 30 years, came forward in the 1990s to reveal to the BBC that the TR-38 successor, the TR-3B Astra, was capable of silent air flight, amazing supersonic speeds, and gravity-defying turns and maneuvers. It could also manage space travel and fly it using a gravity-manipulating magnetic field disruptor at its core. Maybe the UK government report was craftily referring to the TR-3B when it stated it wasn't aware of the origins of the current sightings, while comfortably sidestepping the subject of the original TR-3 aircraft which it carefully hinted at admitting. Regardless, these aircraft all seem pretty futuristic and way beyond the technology we have currently, technology that is at least in the public domain anyway. So how did we get so advanced? It's common knowledge that wreckage was recovered from the UFO crash at Roswell by United States Air Force staff. Rumors have flooded the UFO investigative community over the years that there have been other crashes on US territory since Roswell too, some of which resulted in further recovered technology and life forms. Further, and this may sound a little mind-blowing, in 1954, several meetings between extraterrestrial living entities and then-President Dwight D. Eisenhower supposedly took place at both Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico and Edwards Air Force Base in California. The meetings were between the US government and several different extraterrestrial races. It is speculated that there were three meetings in total that occurred. The only evidence for these meetings, however, is eyewitness testimony. Allegedly, the reasons the extraterrestrial races gave that they wanted the government and themselves to come together was to agree a treaty. Now, the next part of this story is confirmed by almost 300 eyewitnesses to the event and or being in a confirmed position of power that is privy to this information on an official level. Air Force One landed at Holloman Air Force Base in February 1954. Public records would also confirm that the president was at Holloman that day. After Air Force One landed, it then taxied back to the far end of the runway and contacted the tower. It instructed them to turn off their radar, turn off all the lights, and pull down all the blinds, shutters, and close all the doors and windows of the airbase. The base immediately complied. Following which, three bright white craft emerged in the sky above Air Force One. One remained there, hovering, another simply vanished in plain sight, while the third slowly came to land in front of the president's plane. The doors of Air Force One were opened, as were the doors of the craft, and President Eisenhower descended to meet a humanoid that had come to greet him. President Eisenhower and several aides were then invited into the extraterrestrial spacecraft, following which a meeting took place for around 45 minutes, before the American delegates exited and returned to Air Force One. Allegedly, the following was agreed between the United States and the visiting entities. Point 1. We would not be involved in their affairs and they would not become involved in ours. Point 2. they would help us with developing our technology. Point 3. They would not make a treaty with any other nation on Earth. Point 4. They could abduct humans for various experiments, but had to provide names and locations of all those that they abducted to a committee of humans that had been set up here on Earth. This committee would be the aliens' point of contact between the extraterrestrial race and us on Earth. Point 5. The public would not be informed about the existence of extraterrestrials. Is this terrifying? Does this answer questions or possibly pose more? Under the presidency of Harry Truman, it is speculated that a group had been set up that would oversee the alien threat. They would also be responsible for decisions regarding all extraterrestrial contact, recovery of crashed crafts, and reverse engineering programs from the study of alien technology. They would report only to the president and not reveal any aspect of their work to anyone other than he. They would be made up of 12 senior or high-ranking individuals from the government, scientific profession, and military leaders. The group would later be discovered as being named Majestic 12. The discovery would come when in 1984, secret government documents dating back to the Truman presidency were leaked to ufologist Jamie Shandera. Shandera was a well-known UFO researcher at the time, having co-authored the book The Roswell Incident in 1980 with William Moore. Both Moore and Shandera claimed that after the book was released, multiple military servicemen came forward hoping to leak further information and classified documents to them. They hoped these would further aid their research into the US government's alien cover-up. Shandera received an anonymous microfilm in 1984, contained on which were the Operation Majestic 12 documents. These documents, signed by President Harry Truman, confirmed the setting up of the Majestic 12 group and what their responsibilities were. Further, another document that was found in the National Archives a year later in 1985 by renowned nuclear physicist and researcher Stanton T. Friedman appeared to confirm the existence of Majestic 12 also. The document was written by President Truman's assistant Robert Cutler. It was correspondence to then-General Nathan T. Twining advising him of a Majestic 12 briefing that would take place on July 16, 1954. So why does any of this matter? I guess because if there is even a fraction of truth in any of this information, then the United States government has been playing the lead role in a cover-up of the existence of extraterrestrial life since at least 1947, which would be monumental. But why? Why would they cover up this information? Surely they would just tell us if there were aliens out there that we knew of? Don't we have a human right to know? Well, let's go a little bit deeper. The Brookings Institution is a research organization that was founded in 1916 in Washington, D.C. Its primary role is to conduct research and education in social sciences in areas such as economics, metropolitan policy, governance, foreign policy, and global economy and development. In 1960, NASA commissioned a report from them and was later submitted to both the Houses of Representatives and Congress and was later added to the Congressional Record of 1961. The significance of this report was the section titled "The Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life." Some choice paragraphs from what would later be known as the Brookings Report are as follows, and I quote, "Anthropological files contain many examples of societies, sure of their place in the universe, which have disintegrated when they have had to associate with previously unfamiliar societies espousing different ideas and different life ways. Others that have survived such an experience usually did so by paying the price of changes in values, attitudes, and behavior. The knowledge that life existed in other parts of the universe might lead to a greater unity of men on Earth, based on the oneness of man, or on the age-old assumption that any stranger is threatening. Much would depend on what, if anything, was communicated between man and the other beings, however." Overall, the Brookings Report advised that knowledge of the existence of extraterrestrials should ultimately be kept away from the public, for our safety, understanding, for reasons of how it would affect religious organizations and scientists, and for the fear that if extraterrestrials made contact with us, there is the possibility our culture could be absorbed into theirs or our society destroyed altogether. I guess if you wanted to look at it that way, you could say that the outcome of the report matches exactly what the orders of the Majestic 12 agreement did. That the general public would not be informed about the existence of extraterrestrials, even if the government became aware. So let's take another leap forward a little bit. For centuries, there have been reports from people all over the world of lights and movement being observed on the moon's surface. The activity has always been sporadic and intermittent, and not always regular in its occurrence, but it has most certainly been seen, and for a long time. In 1608, with the invention of telescopes, astronomers began to observe this phenomenon. What the heck was it? It was definitely something, but scientists could not come up with a plausible explanation. The activity is particularly focused around the crater Aristarchus, which is named after the Greek astronomer and mathematician. It is about the same size as the Grand Canyon, although much, much deeper, and can be found on the northwest area of the moon's light surface that faces Earth. There was hope that when Apollo 11 travelled to the moon, that they would be able to observe and photograph the area. Unfortunately, upon Apollo 11's return, NASA had seemed to have lost the photographs. Buzz Aldrin did state in a press conference after Apollo 11's return that he couldn't make out what was in the crater, but it was the brightest thing they could see in any direction. But it's not quite over just yet. In 1994, NASA and the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization sent a joint probe to the moon as part of the Clementine Project. The crater was photographed again. This time the photographs clearly showed a bluish dome located in the center of the crater with smaller domes housed inside. This is starting to sound a little bit like science fiction, right? Well, it was the United States government themselves who initially began the investigation work into what was going on the moon. NASA compiled a report into the phenomenon in 1966. Known as the Transient Lunar Phenomenon Report, they tasked four scientists to look into the subject and provide further detail, which they subsequently did. They documented all the observances of the phenomenon between 1950 and 1967, and finalized that to know for sure what the phenomenon was, they would utilize the photography and observances of Apollo 11. It just seems so strange that we haven't heard much about this phenomenon since. Which brings us up until the present day, almost. On December 17th, 2017, the New York Times published an article which talked about the allocation of $22 million to the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. This program was set up to identify, as the name suggests, potential aerial threats. But to be clear, these threats are not from foreign countries. There are dozens of those programs already in existence, and those are in the public domain. This aerial phenomenon that it refers to is aerial threats of an unknown origin outside the planet Earth's boundaries. So this also begs the question, if we have known of them for a while and possess their technology, why do we still study them, and in particular, study them as a potential threat? There is rumor and gossip that I found online that suggests that the race of aliens that we initially made the treaty with in 1954, now referred to as the Greys, quickly broke that treaty and can no longer be trusted. But as I said, this is hearsay that I came across from several sources online, so make of that what you wish. For me personally, extraterrestrials, aliens, and little green men are something that I both believe exist and used to fear as a young child. I find it extremely difficult to believe that they cannot exist, especially given the statistical favor which heavily balances their way. I think the ones that may be here potentially study us like ants in an ant farm. But by being so far technologically ahead of us, they cannot perceive us as anywhere close to their equal, which is, of course, a scary thought. After all, do you think twice about squashing a bug that you come across? Likely there are races out there very similar to us and technologically equal, but unfortunately, distance makes it unlikely we will ever meet. The paradox of life from another world is almost heartbreaking, knowing that we might always be alone, or at least a super inferior study subject. Yes, we might possibly find small life on other closer worlds someday, but I fear it won't be in our lifetimes. And if we do, will we be able to show the humanity we have within us? Or will we treat them like we fear we might be treated by invaders from Mars if they ever come? I would love to know your thoughts and theories, guys, so drop me a message, be it on Instagram, which is @dead_souls_podcast, or via Twitter, which is @deadsoulscast, or via our website, which is www.deadsoulssocialclub.com. It's always awesome to speak with you guys and listen to your theories and thoughts. Also, we're on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/deadsouls. Head on over and reap the wonderful benefits. It really helps us in the creation of the podcast if you can show us any support. So thank you very much if you can. Take care of yourselves, everyone, and sleep tight. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night.